Good evening, and thank you for hanging in so late this evening on the last full day of the conference. I'm going to talk today about some focus group findings that informed the development of a prevention soap opera in what we call Project REAL. And I have no disclosures. In the entertainment education tradition, we set out to develop a series of narratives that varied by genre. We looked at comedy and drama, and we also had an expert interview as a control group. And the other variable in our 2x2 was character centrality. We looked at main and subsidiary characters. In entertainment education, there is a health storyline that's introduced after you've already kind of gotten hooked into a plot and you've come to care about characters. And we have studied it many times from broadcasts where we have no real control over the content of the shows here in the United States. So this was a step back. We were funded to do a controlled experiment to examine narrative elements and their impact in captive groups of women listening to these versions in Richmond, Virginia, where I teach. We were looking at breast and colon cancer screening among African American women because they are at risk for later diagnosis of these cancers and, as a result, worse prognoses, and they're dying at high rates, which, you know, we felt was completely unacceptable. Now, formative research is necessary to help writers and producers develop culturally appropriate scripts that reflect the barriers and benefits to health behavior that are perceived by a target audience. And so our focus groups were guided by open-ended focus group guides that had some theory in the questions, a little bit of theory of planned behavior, a little bit of social cognitive theory, and some social marketing, as much as we could fit in a reasonable amount of time. It was a convenient sample. The women were 50 and up, because that is definitely the age at which colorectal cancer screening is recommended. Now, there's some controversy about breast cancer and when that should start, but everybody agrees that by 50, women ought to be getting screened for breast cancer. We've recruited our participants in a variety of ways. One was the annual conference of the Baptist General Convention, which is a statewide organization. I made church pulpit announcements. We distributed flyers in community venues and also recruited through word of mouth. Here are some of our ladies that were at the Baptist General Convention, and I think their smiles say all you have to know about them. They're wonderful, warm, welcoming people, and it was an honor and a pleasure to work with them. They were, however, much more interested in the church hat table than they were in our recruitment table, and this actually was worked into our script, which had a conflict between Loretta, who was old enough to be screened, and her former runner-up to the Miss Black Virginia pageant daughter-in-law over her, you know, fairly well-worn church hat. We talked to 61 women, and we used what is called a doer non-doer strategy. More formally, it's a positive deviance strategy, where you have heterogeneous groups who either perform the behavior or don't, and they're similar in all other ways. And so you can determine how it is that they're similar and how it is that they differ. Which you couldn't do if you had doers and non-doers in the same group, because you wouldn't know who's a doer and a non-doer from the transcript. We had two breast cancer non-doer groups, two breast cancer doer groups, three colorectal cancer non-doer, and one colorectal cancer doer group. About half the women had just a high school education or less. Two-thirds reported having health insurance, but that included Medicaid. And and you can see the other demographics. The interesting thing to point out here is that there were no we ran some chi-squares, and there were no significant differences in demographics between the doer and non-doer groups. And so the differences that you're going to see are not about education or income or whatever. These were sample venues for our groups. It looks from the slide like the church would be the more welcoming and pleasant venue, but it turned out that the libraries, like the sort of sad-looking little library on your left, was much better venue. The church involved a lot of interruptions. There were children there after school, and one lady left early, and we were in this big cavernous room, and the audio tape didn't work very well. The library had a perfect room, and that we'd recommend that you go with libraries. We ran our listening groups later for the randomized controlled trial in churches because we needed five rooms, and Sunday school buildings were just the thing. So just for your information. They got $50 for participating, and we fed them. And we had two moderators, one of whom is a co-author, and she's here with me today, Melissa Hayward. We ran the groups for about 90 minutes and used NVivo version 9 to code the data. The groups had the usual structure: consent, warm-up, in-depth discussion, and close. We had separate guides for breast cancer and colorectal cancer. And we used a projective stimulus in our groups, rather like the Rorschach ink blot, you know, whatever you read. It's ambiguous what this lady's doing, what she's thinking. And so what you tell me she's thinking says more about you than it does about the ambiguous stimulus. We started with a series of codes that included, that reflected the interviewer's guide and that reflected daily activities so that our eventual script would sound like it ought to, you know, would seem realistic. Health information sources, screening, knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors, perceived screening, barriers and facilitators, characteristics of a role model, who you might admire, because in the entertainment education recipe, there's a transitional character who's not performing the health behavior, there's a role model character who does and is rewarded, the transitional character eventually changes and gets rewarded, and so we needed to know who they might admire. We were going to have a comedy condition, so we needed to know something about humor with regard to these very serious illness topics, and we wanted to know what their media habits were. And we had a hierarchical coding tree and established a rate of reliability of at least 80% between two coders. Now, in general, we observed some major motifs. There was a great deal of fear in all of the transcripts. They said fear makes cancer information stand out when you're looking for health information. They said fear prompts service seeking. They were afraid of the test. They were afraid to find out something was wrong. They were afraid of a positive test. There was just a lot of fear going on. There was also a major motif of prayer. And prayer was a daily activity. It was a way to cope. It was considered healing. It was what you do when you feel joy. This just went throughout the transcripts. And then for non-doers, there was a motif of extreme or even too extreme self-reliance expressed by statements like, you know your own body better than anybody else or any test. No one could influence me to be screened. I do what, you know, I think I ought to do. I don't run to the doctor about every little thing. With no health insurance, I know I ought to get some screening tests, but I pick the ones that I'm going to get, and I just let the others wait. Now, getting down to the specific results, we noticed that there were common themes, but then there were differences between doers and non-doers. And one of the common themes was, I go seek health information when I have a symptom, when a topic affects my family or friends. The doers went when there was a family history of disease, and the non-doers said, doctors make too much of family history. One even said, doctors treat you preventatively if you have family history, and they gave me insulin because I have a family history of diabetes. In terms of information sources other than doctors, there were some common themes. The doers also said they used newspapers for health information, and the non-doers said they used books about holistic, naturopathic cures. What makes a media message credible? They both believed that if it came from a doctor, like a show called Doctors, which is on in the morning, and it's apparently a spinoff of Dr., is it Oz, who is a spinoff of Oprah. And now there's something called Doctors, and it's got a panel of specialists, and you know, the women all often said, you know, these are real doctors. You know, these are real doctors, you listen to what they have to say. In addition to that, they also said if you can confirm it with a second source, you know, if you read something one place and you confirm it someplace else, then you can believe it. They both felt that way, but doers thought you should verify information on the internet, and non-doers assumed that if you heard it on TV, it was probably true, because for legal reasons, that information obviously had to be vetted, they assumed, unless they knew differently from their personal experience. Again, you see this heavy reliance on, you know, one's own self. Calls to the toll-free number. They had similar mnemonics. Write it down on a calendar. You know, use a phone word like 1-800-QUIT-NOW, 1-800-4-CANCER. Call while you're by yourself, and that way you won't be distracted. But the doers and the non-doers had some different strategies beyond these common ones. The doers said, you hear this toll-free number, you call it right away. That way, you know, you won't forget. The non-doers said, get somebody else to remind you. And I call when I'm by myself because I'm not sure I want anybody else to know that I'm making this call. So about screening itself, they both thought screening for breast cancer ought to be done twice a year. They didn't think once a year was enough. They said, if it's important to do once a year, it's important to do twice a year. And they agreed that mammograms hurt and that nurses were rough, but that it was worth it for early detection. The doers said screening gives you peace of mind, and that the buddy check system was a good idea, and that is to say, have a friend who reminds you, perhaps on your birthday, to get your mammogram this year. The non-doers said tests for health problems, like, for example, blood pressure, are often inaccurate. And, you know, they reflect fleeting conditions, like a bad day. In terms of barriers, there was a lot of talk about being out of work and not having insurance. And both the doers and the non-doers were wrong about how often you should be screened and how old you should be. But look at the list of barriers, additional barriers for non-doers. I won't read them all in the interest of time, but there were no particular barriers for doers. And there was this long list for the non-doers, including thinking that the mashing of the breast in the mammogram would damage the breast and actually give you breast cancer. The projective, remember the picture of the lady? But the doers and the non-doers thought she looked old. And so, you know, we would use a different one the next time. They were kind of offended by that. And they thought she was thinking about whether to be tested. But the doers said that she was thinking that it was something she should do. And the non-doers said she's wondering if maybe she's too old to get tested. She'll procrastinate. Now, the admirable woman data was poignant. Some of the non-doers could not think of a single admirable woman. In common, though, the doer groups and the non-doer groups admired their mothers. And they admired breast cancer survivors who had maintained their faith and gotten through the disease through faith. The Doers admired Oprah because she got the word out about mammograms and colorectal cancer testing and all of that. The non-doers admired a double amputee who didn't complain about her condition. In terms of fatalism, common theme was you're going to die at some point, but the doers said basically the idea that your health was out of your hands and that you didn't have to work at it was an antiquated attitude that some people in the South still have. You know, they didn't consider Richmond the South. And that it wasn't really an intelligent situation. And you have to fight to the end. Now, I won't go through all of this either, but these were the humor quotes. And what I want to say about this is that humor is tricky. And it depends, according to the advertising and the public health literature, on a sensitive match between the topic, the audience, and the joke. And I want you to notice that for breast cancer, it was the non-doers that had a lot of humor themes. And for the colorectal cancer groups, it was the doers. And so in our soap opera, ultimately, we didn't have any breast cancer jokes. The admirable woman wouldn't have treated that as having anything humorous about it. So what went to the writer? We sent the writer transcripts of the focus groups, the writer of the narrative, a typeline report of themes, and then we had a training in entertainment education for both the scientists and the creatives. We worked with Tim and Daphne Reed from New Millennium Studios. She was the second Aunt Viv of Fresh Prince in Bel-Air, and he was Venus Flytrap in WKRP in Cincinnati. They have a recording studio right down the street. Involved doing something called The Game, which was developed in Africa to teach writers how to incorporate barriers and facilitators to health behaviors into their plots. And you actually roll dice, and you pick a barrier or a facilitator card, and you use that to craft plot points and turns and setbacks and things in a script over a series of episodes. This is a chart of a sample of the results of the game. In terms of how this informed the plot, positive and negative role models, we fleshed them out on the basis of our data. The transitional character, the protagonist, was, you know, raised her son alone, was, you know, ruggedly independent. Some of the conflicts came out of the focus groups, and she was rewarded with a grandchild. Many of the women, when they talked about what they did during the day, talked about babysitting, talked about grandchildren. That was, you know, when they smiled the most. And so, you know, when she finally gets screened, she's going to live a long time. And, you know, the spoiled beauty queen had a baby, and, you know, she'll be able to see her great-grandchildren because she goes every year and she updates it. And then we had a number of just direct quotes that were included, including some jokes like, you know, if you send your FOBT kit back in the mail, I would hate to be the mailman, you know, that kind of thing. So stay tuned for the final results of our randomized control study comparing the different versions. We do have preliminary results. And would you like to know what one? Comedy or drama, what would you think?
Comedy.
Comedy won. Comedy, but preliminary, you know, not peer-reviewed. And we're going to write a grant proposal to get the winning version on the radio in a field test and hopefully expose lots of women. So thank you very much.